home of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.
Find the trailer shop. Score!
Listening to The Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligan. This is your inside perspective on the NHL, players, the Blue Jackets, and more.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
Here's former Jacket Jody Shelley and the voice of the Jackets, Bob McElligan.
Welcome to The Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligan alongside of Jody Shelley. It was nice of us to give instructions to our guests before we even got going here. Poor guy.
We were hanging out, Bob.
I know, we were.
All
then all of a sudden,
the
music is ending, and I'm going, oh, yeah, geez, I guess we should tell
we
them
went
what
over
we
our
do.
Rehearsal and everything, and we are ready to go.
We are definitely ready to go. We're joined by Oliver Bjorkstrand, Blue Jackets forward here in the studio. Oliver, thanks for taking some time out of your Wednesday night to join us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we love having you. This is the NHL, baby. This is how it goes, right? You get called up to the league, you score a couple of goals, play a couple of games, then you get to come on the radio show with us.
That's right. And he's only our second in-house guest, I think. Maybe third. We had Hartnell last year right at the end of the year, and I think we had someone else. Now, I forget who it was, but...
It was a really impactful guest.
We always love having guests in here, but with the schedule, it's just hard for us to arrange this. So thanks, Oliver, for coming in here to see us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks.
All right, so now you've had some time here. Not a lot of time, but you've had some time here. And have you acclimated yourself to NHL style of living, style of play?
Yeah, I think so. It's only been a few days, or not that many days, actually, but a lot of games and every day gets easier and just kind of trying to adapt to it. So just having a good time and trying to enjoy it.
All right. When you got here, I mean, it was kind of a whirlwind, but fortunately your dad was at that first game. And by that second game, now that you look at that last week and what happened, is it pretty amazing for you what's gone on here for you in the last little while?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like the call-up came maybe a little bit as a shock. And, I wasn't sure if I was going to get one this year, and it finally came. And, I just got really excited and just was ready to play the first game. And, the first game, I thought it went pretty good. But, unfortunately, we didn't get the win or anything. But then next game, I felt a lot better, and I got a few goals. And I'm happy my dad could be there.
And if you look back, to the development camp in June, training camp in September, October, and then your first 5 months in North America playing professional hockey, what has changed for you now that you look back and see that things are different and you seem to feel comfortable and a little more confident? What has changed in your mind?
Well, I think I had to adapt to the difference between junior hockey and pro hockey. Obviously, I had an injury, and it kind of maybe slowed me down a little bit with my development. And even after my injury, it took a little time to really adapt to the league. But, as time went on and I got more games, I felt a lot better. And right now, I'm feeling pretty good about my game.
Is there something that you worked on in the American League? I mean, you guys had a lot of practice. I know the games are mostly on the weekend. Myself and Bob were in the American League also. And is there something you kind of calmed down and said, okay, I need to do this because guys are stronger or guys are quicker?
Well, I'm aware that I'm a bit smaller than most guys playing in the A or in the NHL. So obviously, during the season, sometimes it's kind of hard to do a lot of weight workouts and get strong on that. You usually try to focus on that in the summer. But for me, I feel like in my game, mostly maybe defense was a big part of it. I know a lot of coaches always told me if I want to get the call-up, I got to play good defense. So I try to focus on the defensive part of the game. And then off that, my offense came with it, so that's what I thought most about.
In talking about it, you just said you didn't know if a call-up was going to come this year. When you came into training camp, there was a lot of buzz about you, and maybe you were a guy that if you have a good training camp, mm-hmm. you had a chance to make this roster right from the get-go. Yeah. Well, they sent you down fairly early, and then, as you mentioned, the injury and all of that stuff. But were you disappointed even coming out of training camp that you didn't perform the way that you wanted to or enough to get them to keep you around and have a real shot of being on that opening day roster?
Yeah. Well, I think any kid in a situation like me would, be disappointed to get sent down. So I got sent down, and of course I was disappointed, and I wish I would have had maybe a few more games to kind of prove myself. But they felt like they wanted to send me down, and I just had to accept that and kind of work from there, and just work hard and and try to get better.
And that's really the key to it. And Jody, you know this because you've been up and down. You've seen guys come up and down. When you get sent down, you have two choices. You either don't like it and take it in stride and fix it so you get called back up, or you go and you pout and you don't play well, and then all of a sudden you find yourself buried, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's true. You, yeah, you just got to, you know, take it as it is and then, you know, work hard and prove them that they made a wrong decision.
And it's interesting, even some guys, Bob and Oliver, they go down and they're shocked that they got sent down because their agent told them they're going to, you know, they're going to get a good chance. The GM and the coaches tell us. So some guys, it takes them a while even to accept that they're playing with line mates even down there. But it seems like Oliver, you guys, from what I sound, have a, from what I've heard about the team up in Lake Erie, have a great group of guys that really work well together.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like we have a really good team that can go far. I know the teams in our division are all good teams, so once playoff time comes, it's going to be tough. But I do think we have a really good group of guys that really can make a good fight in playoffs.
What's been the best thing now that's been, like, now you've been in Columbus, you've been around, is there a restaurant or is there something that you found that you just love about being maybe just here or in the locker room or in the National Hockey League in general?
I think it's just everything, the fans, playing the games, being around in the nice facilities and stuff like that. You just take it all in and you know, it's a dream come true and you really just enjoy it.
So like the plane, fancy meals, yeah, at the rink, the filet mignon, all the good stuff, right?
All the pregame food, the plane especially. I love the traveling. It makes it so much easier. So there's not a lot of bad stuff about the NHL. It's really, they treat us really good.
How about that sauna?
I like the sauna. I haven't got to use it too much.
So you're not too relaxed yet. You wait till all the veterans leave, and then you sneak in there, maybe.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. You know, we talk about it all the time, Jody and I. When you're talking about the food and how you get pampered on the plane, you know, we do not miss those days of having to sign up for a sub before the game in the American Hockey League, and then hoping that when they emptied the box, your sub was still in there, and that they didn't forget to deliver yours, because then you starve the whole way home.
Are they still doing that in the American Hockey League? Do you have to sign up before the game for a meal on the bus?
No, Lake Erie treats us pretty good, so they make sure we have the meals after games.
Look at that.
What about junior, when you were back in junior last year?
Well, I played for Portland, the Winterhawks, and I feel like we had a lot of money for that stuff. So
yep.
That club treated us good. But I've heard some teams, you know, if they're a little bit low-budget teams, they might have to do stuff like that.
See, in our day, they were all low budget. Yeah. They were all like
pre-game
that.
Pre-game meal at Sheets gas station on the way.
That's
to
right.
Wheeling.
Stop and get a couple of chili dogs and get on the bus and go to Wheeling and play. That's how it was back in the day. We're joined by Blue Jackets forward Oliver Bjorkstrand here for the first half of the Inside Edge. And, you know, has this all really been kind of a whirlwind when you don't expect a call-up and then when you do get it and all of a sudden, not only are you being thrust into games, but I really think that John Tortorella is doing it the right way with you, where you're a skill guy, you're a scoring guy, so you're getting on one of the top lines on this team. You're not one of those guys that's playing 20 minutes in the AHL and coming up and playing six on the fourth line in the NHL.
Yeah, well, he's Coach Tortorella's giving me a lot of ice time and power play opportunities. So, you know, I'm trying to show him that I can play those minutes. And every time I step on ice, I try to create something and make sure I'm in the right spots. So, you know, if he gives me a lot of ice time, I just have to prove him that I can take it all in.
The irony of him being your coach is he and your father were college teammates at Maine. And then when your dad was coaching, and Torts told us last week about how they would exchange drills and ideas as far as coaching goes. So they've had a relationship for a long time. And as Torts pointed out, he goes, "Now I feel so old, I'm coaching his kid." But that's really weird, isn't it? I mean, your dad has a relationship with this guy, and now he happens to be your first coach in the NHL.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny that he ended up being my coach in the NHL. Like, yeah, like you said, they played college together 1 year and knew each other from there, and I think they played against each other too in some of the leagues over here. So I feel like it's really funny that he's my coach, and I don't know, so far I've liked it.
Did your dad have any tips for you?
When it comes to
John Tortorella?
He hasn't told me. I know how Tortorella is, so you didn't have to tell me too much, but a little bit.
What's your dad's path? Was he played professional hockey in North America? Or was he born back in Denmark?
No, he was born and raised in Minnesota.
Okay.
So his family's from the States, obviously. And then he played minors over here. He played in IHL. And then he ended up going to Europe and to Denmark. And I think he met my mom there, and that's why he ended up just staying there and playing the rest of his career and had a good career there. So that was kind of his path.
So Bjorkstrand, it was your grandfather from
Denmark? I think they came from Sweden or Norway.
Okay.
Bjorkstrand's a Norwegian or Swedish name. So not even Danish, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because I was wondering, because I know we've talked about a coach, and I didn't patch it all together, but we met your dad and your agent after that, your first and second game, and it was so great to see the joy that he had to be in the building. I can't even imagine having my parents there for my first game, and let alone that first goal. But I was going to ask you about your shot, because we hear you talk about your scoring ability, but you've got a really – you've got something special with your shot. Is there something you've worked on with that?
I feel like I've always kind of had like a nifty shot, kind of like surprises goalies a little bit. But my dad would always make me shoot pucks in the yard and stuff like that. So I do work a lot of my shot in the summer and try to keep improving it. So it's something I have worked on a lot. I don't feel like it's just natural.
No?
No.
It's something that you've worked at?
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask this question because, Gordy Haggerty?
He's
a coach, U14, yep. AAA hockey team. He texted me last night during the game. He said, if you get a chance, ask Oliver why he doesn't move his hand up and down the stick during shots. It seems like you just keep it in one spot. Now, that's a technical question, and I cannot take credit for noticing that. Now, is that something that is just a comfort thing, or do you even notice that yourself?
Not really.
Yeah, okay.
If a person would ask me how I shoot the puck, I wouldn't really know how to explain it. I just, it's something you just have always done. So I feel like it just comes natural now.
Yep.
You're off the hook.
I told him I'd ask.
Yeah, right. You didn't even notice. So he doesn't know. You don't know. There you go.
There you go.
It's all good. Hey, did your dad ever coach you?
Yeah, he did. He coached me my last year in Denmark. He's been coaching the pro team in Denmark, in my town, Herning. For a lot of years, and my 16-year-old year, I made the team, and he coached me for 1 year. So we had some good times, and we had some bad times in the house.
I was going to ask you how that is, because that could go either way.
Driving home must have been fun.
Yeah. He has a reputation of being a really hard coach in Denmark. So sometimes it wasn't easy, but I learned a lot from him.
Something going on in the University of Maine up there, those guys get that reputation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a very good point. I would imagine it's one of those situations where maybe you look back at it far down the road and go, boy, it was special to play for my dad that year.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And my older brother, he played for the team too. So I played with him, and my dad was the coach. So it was kind of a special thing going on there. But, again, we had our tough times, and there was the battles in the house. But
well, at least if your brother's playing there, you hope that he has the bad night, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Dad, what are you getting on me for? Did you see what he did in the second period? And just kind of deflect the blame.
Yeah, no, I would do that a lot.
I don't blame you. That would be a good plan. We're talking with Oliver Bjorkstrand of the Blue Jackets. He's going to stay with us for another segment. If you have a question for him, tweet it to me, at Bobby Mac Sports. Got a couple of good ones, and we'll ask those questions of Oliver when we return on The Inside Edge on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to The Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley, and we are happy to have with us tonight Blue Jackets forward Oliver Bjorkstrand is in studio, and I've gotten some questions tweeted to me, and let me just tell you, like, people did their homework today. I mean, these are good questions. These are very good questions. Nobody blew off this assignment, and it was a very quick impromptu assignment, too.
This is what this show is about.
It is. So let's just get right to it. Nick Hendrickson wants to know, what was going through your mind when you scored your first goal?
Just really excited and happy, I guess. I think it's a dream come true scoring a goal in the NHL. So once you see the puck going in the net, you just kind of lift your arms and just celebrate, and it's a really good feeling. So, it's hard to describe, really, but it felt great.
It was a big one, too.
I mean, you guys had just given up a lead, and then all of a sudden a couple of quick goals, and yours was part of that to get right back into a big lead.
Yeah, I know they tied us up there, and, you know, I just went straight to the net, and the puck bounced out to me, so it was nice to get that goal.
Yeah.
Did you watch it yet? Have you seen it on tape?
Yeah, I watched it a few times.
10 times right after the game was over. What are you talking about?
Different, is it different? Yeah, of course. Is it different than what you thought? I mean, is it it was such a quick play.
I don't know. I knew how the puck went in and everything. I couldn't remember what happened before that, so it's kind of nice to see that part. But I remembered it, but, you know, it's a cool video to watch.
Yeah.
All right, our next question comes from CBJ or Die. Twitter handles, love them. It says, have you talked to Paul Bittner since you've been called up? Now, Paul, a teammate in Portland with the Winter Hawks, and he was here during development camp with you this year. Have you talked to him since you got called up?
We've texted a little back and forth. He texted me congratulations with the call up and all that stuff, and then the goal too. I haven't talked to him on the phone, but he's one of my better friends. So he sent me a text and said congratulations.
Hey, and he had a great camp here. I mean, he was fun to have around during the summer. Big body guy, and I mean, you played with him. What's the potential for a guy like that?
Well, I think everybody knows he has a lot of potential. Big body, can protect the puck, good shot, and knows hockey. So. You know, hopefully it's a bright future for him, and hopefully one day we can play on the team together.
What I really liked about him the most was I shouldn't say very seldom, because in development camp you see it quite a bit, but even into training camp, the pure joy that would come out of that guy every time he walked in the room. He picked up a stick, you put a mic, most guys, you get the microphone out and they're like, oh my god, he can't. But he was just the happiness coming out of him just to be a part of the organization and be here was overwhelming, I thought.
Yeah, I've talked to him about it, and I think his dream is to make the NHL, and just to be around the whole organization is makes him really happy, and he's really looking forward to the future and really hoping to make the team one day.
And to play on your line.
And play in my
Speaking
line.
Of that, I got a question. You've played with a lot of players here with the Blue Jackets now, and last game you were with Dubinsky, I think? Was it?
Last game I was with Boone Jenner. And
Boone, that's right. And to play with a centerman like Boone, I mean, I know you play with Wennberg too, but is there an adjustment for you with different line mates, or is it?
Maybe a little bit. I'm sure Boone and Wennberg play a little bit differently. Boone works really hard and hits hard and all that stuff, and Wennberg maybe is a little more I would say maybe a little more skilled type of player. So I can feel a little bit of difference, but they're both great players to play with, and I'm really, really fortunate to play with them.
So you don't go into the game thinking, okay, Brandon Saad is that guy that's going to have speed down the wing. If I get it in this area, I'm going to look for him. Or you're not like, Boone's going to be the first on the forecheck, maybe I can back off. Or you just go?
Yeah, I guess that stuff goes through my mind, but I feel like Saad is a fast guy, and then I play with Calvert too, which is a really fast guy, so maybe I kind of have the same mindset with those two guys. But, you know, I feel like all the players I play with have been playing really good and really lucky to play with them.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue with our Twitter questions for Oliver Bjorkstrand. Courtney Matthews has a hypothetical for you here. How would you have celebrated had you scored a hat trick? Would you really played that up in your second NHL game?
No, that's a hard question. I don't really know if you score a hat trick that early on in your NHL career. I don't really know what kind of celebration it would do.
go to the bench, take a seat.
No. You ride the stick right down the middle of the ice. Throw your helmet to the fans, gloves, and then just walk right down the tunnel.
I don't know. Might be a little too early to do that stuff.
Well, it would have been memorable had you done it, I'll tell you that.
For sure.
Emma Rohrenbeck says, what is your favorite part of being with the Blue Jackets right now?
I don't know, just living the NHL dream. It's cool just being around all the guys that have played in NHL for a lot of years and just learning everything you can from the guys. So, just a dream.
I'm going to lump these two next questions together because they're basically the same thing. John Sherman asked one of them. Michael Chaput, who's not really the Michael Chaput that you play with, is the other guy. But basically, what's the difference between the AHL and the NHL? And more specifically, how is the speed of the game different?
I do think the AHL has a lot of speed, and there's a lot of good players in the AHL. But again, the NHL is the best league in the world, and every player that plays there is going to be fast, strong, and have a good pair of hands. So, you know, the level is just a little step above the AHL, and you can feel that on the ice. And but at the same time, you play with a lot of good players, which makes it sometimes a little bit easier, I would say. So a tougher league, but you play with better players, which make it a little easier.
How are practices?
Well, I've heard it. Coach Torello's practices are really hard, but I think I've been fortunate to not been here for one of those yet. So far.
You'll be ready.
Yeah.
You look at the schedule. Hey, look, we have a game Tuesday, Thursday, yeah. Saturday. Good. There'll be no hard practices in there. All right, I got two more for you before we let you go. One's from Melissa O'Toole. She says, which players have you hung out with outside of practice or the games?
Well, I've only been here for a short period of time, so I'd say right now mostly probably Court Biasello or Carlson a little bit. But I haven't had too much time off lately because we've had so many games and kind of been on the game schedule. So I'd have to maybe answer that a little more in a few weeks.
All right, one last one. And I like this one because I like to know about numbers. And Ginger Mail is who's asking this question.
Come on.
Yeah, I know. Were you given number 28 by the club, or did you choose it? And if you did choose it, why?
They gave me the number, so that's going to be a short answer.
All right, there you go. There you go. Would you pick another one?
Well, I used to play with 27 in Portland, and I kind of like that number, but Ryan Murray has it, so I'm going to leave it at that and let him have it.
Smart.
You got to wait.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? It is funny because I was thinking about that last night, and I don't even know why because you know, Cam Atkinson had a different number when he first came in, and Ryan Johansson, when he was here, had one. But I remember Boone Jenner got number 38, and they just handed it to him, and he said, no, I'm not going to change it.
Right.
And he can't now, right? I mean, he's made number 38.
No, I did the same thing. I was 45, and I'm like, why would I change anything?
Yeah.
And then, you know, driving home one day, and you're not on the team, you're like, I should stay with that number. What have I done?
Yeah. All right, tomorrow night you've got the Carolina Hurricanes here. It's such a thrilling win for you guys last night to come back the way that you did.
And, oh, my goodness.
You've played a lot of games this year, and I know that we've talked about the Lake Erie team playing so well, but is that one of the most exciting games you've played in as a pro?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're behind, and we ended up coming back a few minutes before the game. It was really exciting and really fun to be a part of. So I think for sure it's probably the most exciting game I've been,
playing. Well, the NHL, but I mean, I didn't know if you had any tight ones in the AHL.
We had one in the AHL, but it was the opposite way where the team we were playing came back.
Oh,
that's not exciting.
I do think we ended up winning the game, but it was the same situation. So that a little bit different.
I never got to take a penalty or a shootout shot in the National Hockey League. What was that like last night?
It was exciting. A little bit nerve-wracking, but
I bet.
I don't know. I thought I had him there for a sec, but he ended up getting the poke check, so that kind of sucked. But I wish I would have scored.
But that might have set up the next goal because he went for the poke check on Boone, I think.
Yeah, I saw that. He ended up trying to get Boone the poke check, but I think Boone, he had the move figured out. So
Boone was ready because he saw the poke check. So you were the setup guy there.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you an assist on that.
I should get an apple on that one.
See that? If you felt bad about that, now you can leave here feeling good about yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, you set it up. Boone wouldn't have expected the poke check. You set that up. Well done.
Feel better now.
Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow night. Just the last question that we have for you is what do you – when you're going into these games against these teams, I mean, these are guys that you've seen on TV, but – how do you make that adjustment as the game goes on? Because you're seeing different guys in different things every night.
I just try to listen in the meetings and listen to what the coaches have to say and make sure I know the way the teams we play against play. So, I don't know too much about the different teams we play against because I mostly just watch Columbus and I know how they play. But, try to listen to the coaches and just get my mind ready for that.
Taking care of your own game. Oliver, thank you so much for coming in and hanging out with us for a little bit tonight. We really do appreciate it and wish you nothing but the best of luck tomorrow.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Oliver. That was awesome.
All right, Oliver Bjorkstrand joining us tonight on The Inside Edge. Jody Shelley and I are going to continue right after this on 97.1 The Fan. Tomorrow night, Blue Jackets take on the Carolina Hurricanes at Nationwide Arena. And then they're going to go on the road. Saturday game against Nashville, Monday game in Washington, and then later next week in Brooklyn against the Islanders, and then at Carolina to end next week. So Blue Jackets have been home for a long time here and just out for the one game against New Jersey on Sunday. Last night, though, Jody, was that to me, that victory last evening came out of nowhere because they were, I mean, they were hanging around in the game. But once that game went to 2-0, I started to think, uh-oh, this is going to be like the Tampa game a couple of Sundays ago where you had it, you're within one, and then all of a sudden they get that second one in the third period, and you go, oh, boy. But the team didn't react like that last night. They just stayed the course.
It was so strange because, honestly, it felt like the game was over. And it was weird, didn't it? And then, yeah. I mean, when the opposition goes on a power play with just over 2 minutes left, you're like, okay, you know what? And then John Tortorella and his coaching staff pulls Bobrovsky, and you're like, okay, you know, sure, you know, let's put up a bit of a fight. And then you see Boone Jenner and those guys, Atkinson, you see Seth Jones, and then they start, and the puck gets in the net, finally gets in front of Mason with a rebound, which I don't think it happened more than three times before that last night. They get some penetration inside the zone, they get in front of Mason, and bang, Boone Jenner tips a puck, and it's now one. It's 1-0. And then, I mean, it was crazy. With 1:07 left, they were down 2-0.
Right.
And they won the game.
And shorthanded,
and they won the game in a shootout. And if you stuck around for that game in Nationwide Arena last night, I mean, everybody that had a Blue Jackets fan, Blue Jackets jersey or hat, or had bought a ticket, or the coaching staff, it was really awesome.
I was out this afternoon, and a guy says to me, he goes, I was at the game last night. I said, oh, yeah. Did you stay till the end? He goes, no, had my young son there, and I couldn't. Did they win? I go, yeah, in a shootout. scored two times in the final minute, 10 to tie it. He goes, are you serious?
Yeah, he still doesn't believe it.
Right,
he went
exactly.
Home and got on his computer.
He went into the office. Come on, really? He was on his phone 2 seconds after. You're right. But it was that kind of a game. You're right. I mean, I agree with you. I was packed up. My computer was packed up. I was ready to go downstairs. I was
so
like,
were the Flyers.
Doggone.
Flyers are packed up.
Yeah.
They were like, we got. Remember Wayne Simmons went for the empty net last night?
Yes. Yes.
I thought of that today. I was like,
I forgot about that.
Wayne Simmons fired that puck as though the game was over. It was like it was almost like just a formality, like he's going to take a shot at the open net. And I remember how Claude Giroux spun around and gave him a dirty eye, like, what are you doing? Get that to me or wait till I get on the far blue line and I'll negate the icing. It was like a moment of, I don't know if the Blue Jackets noticed that and thought, huh, these guys, because there was back and forth. After Jared Boll knocked down Belmar last night and got kicked out of the game, the Flyers were chirping the Blue Jackets, and every goal there was a bit of antics, and there was stuff built up there. And
you know, when Ryan White really had a big celebration for that second goal.
Oh, yeah. That's his 10th on the year. I don't
right.
think that was – I mean, that was a double celebration for him. So all those things just were lighting fires under the bench of that Blue Jackets team. And you know what? When they scored that first goal, there was a little extra oomph out of maybe it was a second goal, Dubinsky. It was just something right at the bench of the Flyers, and the Flyers bench was flat, and it was that Wayne Simmons attempt on that empty net that was a really like a – you talk about little moments in the game, but that was huge.
Yeah, I forgot about that until you just bring it up, but I now that you say it, I remember saying on the air he wouldn't have done that if it was a one-goal game. It's a 2-0 game at that point, and he just whipped it down the ice. I said, if it was a one-goal game, he tries to get it to the red line and make sure there's no icing. So, yeah, that turned out to be a huge play when
huge
it was all said and done.
Huge play.
Yeah, that was something last night. And good for those guys. And we talked about it after the game last night. I like the fact that it was Jenner and Atkinson that get those goals. You want some of these younger guys to rise to the top. You want them to be leaders. You've got to be successful to be a leader. That's just a fact of the matter. If you're going to talk the talk, you got to walk the walk. And these guys, they're doing it. And they're battling for the team leading goals right now, those two.
Those guys, and Atkinson's been a different guy this second half, this second two-third, or this back half of the season, we'll call it. He's been consistent. He's been strong. And Sergei Bobrovsky last night, I'm telling you, that's his second win in the last seven games, I think, and that's huge for him. That first one was huge after injury, dealing with everything, coming back. And Seth Jones on that goal, like he made some plays last night throughout the game, which were very impressive. But I thought in overtime, late in the game in that last 2 minutes, we'll call it overtime, I guess, when they pull the goalie, he made some smart decisions with that puck, getting it through in that Atkinson goal. And there's another young piece of this team that. And good on John Tortorella. He had those guys out there to see what they were made of.
I saw the TV replay. They've got that nice little camera they have set up next to you that shows the bench when there's a score.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But John Tortorella, and I've watched throughout the year, and, you know, he's not that he never gets emotional or gets into it, but when that second goal went into the net last night, that was as much as I've seen him. I mean, he was really happy and celebrating. That was one of those high fives all around on the bench.
It was such a great scene. And you know, there's people, and we're all frustrated and disappointed. We're fans, we're tied with the team, the players are disappointed, we all are. But when you aren't sure if their hearts are into this or what's going on with their approach to every game, this is a day-to-day business, it's professional sports, and when you look at that celebration by the head coach and every single player, they worked for that game last night, and they got it, and you could see that. That wasn't just a game for those guys. It was such a good thing. You're right. That celebration, we're going to see that again. That was a lot of fun.
That was great fun, and it was great to see them coalesce when they needed to right at the end. And you mentioned Sergei Bobrovsky. I thought a lot of his night was fairly easy, but when it got hard, he was ready to play tough.
And that's got to be tough for a goalie.
I would imagine.
You know, like I think he had four or five scoring chances against by midway through the third period. And that's like, you know, teams don't want any more than 15 scoring chances again. That's what I heard from Craig Hartsburg. So when you have a team that only has five against you midway through the third period, your goaltender's got to be, you know what I mean? Like just, he's got to be big. There was a couple goals against him and a couple breakdowns ended up in the back of the net. But, hey, you're right. He battled. He felt great about himself after the game. And that is a good thing because I think 3 weeks ago we were wondering what was going to happen with Sergei Bobrovsky. And we were talking about Korpisalo and do they shut him down for the year. But, hey, when you got a guy like that that's feeling good about himself and his confidence is good right now going into this back half, this last part of the year, that's a positive thing.
You know, he may have been wondering the same things.
No question.
To be honest, you know, even though he's not saying anything, in the back of your mind, you're watching that other guy play, and you've got to be thinking the same thing.
No question.
What's going on with me all of a sudden here?
And he had five losses before that right. Jersey game. So think about that as a competitor. And you've got someone stepping in doing a heck of a job in Korpisalo.
Yes. So good win for him. The Flyers got what they wanted out of it somewhat. They got the 1 point. So they hold the tiebreaker over Detroit, so that has them in the playoffs as of right now. They're tied with Detroit when it comes to points at 83 apiece, but the Flyers do have one game in hand on the Red Wings. So it's going to be interesting these last couple of weeks watching to see who winds up in the playoffs and who winds up out of the playoffs, because there you have the New York Islanders sitting with 85 points, and they are...
I think they're done. I think the Red Wings and the Flyers get in.
Yeah, so the Islanders are falling, and the Blue Jackets have a chance to affect their fate when they play in Brooklyn next week. We'll come back and wrap up tonight's edition of The Inside Edge right after this on 97.1 The Fan. Well, we just spent that break watching NBC Sportsnet because they were talking about the Jared Bull hit on Pierre-Edward Belmar last night, in which Jared Bull got a 5-minute major for interference and a game misconduct, and now tomorrow has a phone hearing with the NHL and could possibly be suspended for that hit. Now, Bob McKenzie on NBC just went through a whole breakdown of how the league looks at it, and it took him 8.887 seconds between Belmar letting go of the puck and then getting hit. In the league, and according to him, the league usually gives a little bit of forgiveness for 0.5, 0.6. He's at 0.887. And look, John Tortorella didn't think it should have been anything but a 2-minute minor for interference. I tend to agree with that from watching it. They played Tortorella's cut from the press conference last night. So, in other words, they're drumming it up to be a pretty big deal on national television tonight. What do you think? You've been in there. You've been in these situations. You've hit guys like that. What do you think?
One Mississippi. That takes about 0.75. So you get one steamboat, we'll say.
Okay,
right?
Right.
Listen, I've been in those skates. And once you're locked in on a player, so you get excited when you see a player with his head down, not knowing you're coming. And when you see that, you have to do a checklist in your head now. Keep my elbows down. Don't hit his head. Don't come off the ice. You can watch Jared Bull come across and, first of all, gets excited, goes through the checklist, tucks his elbows, makes good contact. It's not in the head. But once he committed and you're at 0.6 seconds, you're locked in. I mean, you are locked in now to stay with it. And it doesn't look like he let up, but I think there's a moment there where he might have let up a little bit. I don't think there needs to be – okay, call him because – you want to take some of that out of the game. You don't want guys – they don't want guys on the ice just looking to have that great hit, right? I get that. But he doesn't need to be suspended. Fine him. He got kicked out of the game last night. That's a major – he got a five-minute major and kicked out. I think that's a good statement. I think you give him a fine if you want. It sends a message to the rest of the league, and I agree. You cannot – and this is what they're stuck with now. They have to compare it to other hits. He's a repeat offender. Where does it fall on the spectrum of what they've done in the past? And where do they want, what direction does this go? If they let this go, what does it tell the rest of the league? So, you know, I honestly felt, and the refs do a heck of a job every night. I don't know what they saw last night. You know what I mean? I think that there's four guys on the ice. They can all contribute to what exactly happened. The linesmen are allowed to say, they ask the linesmen, the referee's able to ask the linesmen in those situations. I think that... one of them saw the impact, maybe. I mean, who knows what they saw? We're speculating now, but they hashed it out. They did a good job hashing it out. They figured out it wasn't a headshot, and then from there they made that call because they thought it was a predatory hit. So, you know, it's too bad for Jared. He's done a good job getting back in the lineup. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think a fine would be probably enough. But you know what? I'm not good in these at all.
I think this factors in, too, quite frankly. Belmar is 6 foot tall. Jared Bull is 6 foot three. And so you've got a bigger guy putting a hit on a smaller guy. And I thought he tried to get his shoulder down and go shoulder to shoulder in that check. And it looks as though he may catch a little bit of the chin or the chin hits the shoulder. Maybe after the shoulder's impact, the chin hits the shoulder, whatever. But I think that he's also a victim of circumstance there too because he happens to be the bigger guy. And I'm sorry, there's a height difference, but to go back to what you said about the officiating, and I'll tell you, this is what I really think, and you watch these guys, and I think they're scared to death. They're scared to death not to make a call on the ice because of how many times there have been suspensions on hits that there's not even been a penalty in the game. So I think it's come to the point now where the guys on the ice get together, and it would probably be like that commercial with a football referee that leaves the mic on. If they actually did leave the mic on, they'd probably be like, what do you guys think? What are we going to do here? Okay, well, we got to get them out of the game, right? We can't say they did. I don't think they know. The only thing that they do know is if we do nothing, we could look stupid here, and we're not going to have that, so let's just give them the five-minute major and get them the heck out of the game.
Right.
That's what I think. I think it's come to that point where they're so afraid of player injury and being the guy that gets blamed for it that they're going to throw them out of the game so they can throw their hands up and say, it wasn't me. I did my part.
And there's second-guessing there too, right? I mean, at that moment, they've got to think of what did everyone else see? What did we see? I mean, those are thoughts natural that are going
to
come to those.
You should almost be able to go back and rewatch that before you make that decision.
See, I always thought one steamboat was it. I mean, if you say one steamboat, it's about 0.85 seconds.
Okay.
So
which
one
is
steamboat.
Right about where he was.
Is that too long? One steamboat. 0.81 that takes.
0.81. And they said that hit was 0.887.
One
and the league's looking at 0.6. Who's looking at – who's sitting with the – okay, listen, I'm sorry. But who's sitting with the stopwatch and deciding this stuff? Because, as you just said and aptly pointed out, as somebody that played in the league and played the game, who's making the determination with a stopwatch? I think it should be 0.67.
No, here's the other part of this. Okay, if I'm the guy that made that pass.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
and I just got ran over like that, I don't think I'm sitting there after that pass thinking, boy, I didn't think that was coming. I didn't think it was coming because it doesn't happen much anymore. But I don't think that I'm thinking, boy, that was late, if I'm the guy that got hit. It's not like I made the pass and then looked away and started skating. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
So if I put myself in that situation, I accept that hit. And I kind of felt Belmar felt that way too, because he got up, he told Jim McCrossin, I'm fine. He skated back to the bench. He got himself together, and he continued playing.
And from that standpoint, one of the things that Tortorella did say last night, and they didn't use it on that clip that he just said, is he said, or maybe he didn't say it last night, maybe he said it today. Anyway, somewhere along the line, and he said it before, I think they're taking the game away from the players.
Well, that's a you know what, and I agree with that a little bit. I mean, there is so much value in letting the players sort it out. But the problem is there's cameras everywhere, and anything that's done is going to be seen. And if it's not handled by the player or the ref, then you have a problem. And not saying that the players have to rely to do things. You know, Gudas said last night after the hit to the bench of the Columbus Blue Jackets, somebody's going to pay for that. And nothing happened after that. So, no, I mean, they're in a playoff situation. They're battling for their every point. I totally get that. That's the situation they're in. But, hey, numbers get taken, and things they'll take care of what they have to take care of down the road. But I agree with that. Players definitely need to take care of the game, and they do in a sense, but it doesn't mean – I mean, I just thought that was an opportunity for Jared Bull to lay a good hit in the defensive zone, and that's it. Was it 0.18 seconds too late? I don't know. Don't ask me that. But as you look at that, I get what Jared Bull was doing. No intent to injure, and it's a good argument.
To me, that's the key. There was no intent to injure on his part last night, and he knew. As soon as he put the hit on, he turned and he looked for which guy's coming after me. He knew exactly what was coming after that. Anyway, we'll see if he's going to be able to play tomorrow against Carolina or not. He will have a hearing tomorrow. Blue Jackets, Hurricanes tomorrow at Nationwide Arena. That one gets underway at 7 o'clock. Our pregame coverage starts at 6:45 right here on The Fan. That'll wrap up the Inside Edge. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long, and thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.
This has been the Inside Edge with Jody Shelley and Bob McElligott.
And I got two words for you. Game over.
Brought to you by Nationwide, AEP, and Ohio Health. March with us.
On your flagship station for the Columbus Blue Jackets, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.